Welcome to Hardwood Handicappers with Zach Cohen, right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
How are we doing? This is Zachary Cohen, senior editor of VSiN.com, with another episode of Hardwood Handicappers. Hardwood Handicappers is sponsored by Better Picks, the fantasy app that turns your basketball takes into cash. Download the Better app and use code VSINPOD to get $10 free, no deposit needed. That's VSINPOD, V-S-I-N-P-O-D. We have a link for that in the description. Today is Thursday, November 20th. We are recording this at 9:30 a.m. Eastern, and I am joined by Jonathan Von Tobel. JVT, the former host of this podcast, is now the co-host of Money Moves, which is on VSiN from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern. And JVT is also a co-host of the podcast Pod to the Futures. JVT, how are you doing?
That's right. You know, a long list. Get them all right. I also do local radio out here, ESPN Las Vegas, for anyone who wants to check it out. Doing good, dude. I mean, the basketball last night was fun. It seems like, I think this has kind of been the theme amongst NBA folks, which is like the season's been really fun. There's been a lot of good games and a lot of interesting results. So I have enjoyed what I have watched. And I just like hoops in general. I don't know how much. I think you watch college basketball too. So like last night, a good mix of pro and college with Alabama and Illinois. So I'm getting my share. You know what I mean?
Yep. Yeah. And Arizona, UConn too. It was a really good night of college hoops. What you just said about the games being good, I'm not a big script guy. I don't believe that anything's, you know, fixed, but every single game that is on Peacock has been unbelievable so far.
Dude, they've done a great show. They've gotten good games, but they've done a great job. I think I texted you guys. Each one of them feels like a little mini Sunday night football. Like we get a whole bunch of those throughout the season. I've never been one to think like, oh, production value, whatever. That's a good case study to show. Like, no, doing good production and all of those sort of things actually does matter to make a game feel more important.
Yeah, I was watching the Suns Blazers game the other night, and I was getting jacked up because they were doing the player intros. They were like zoomed in on Dylan Brooks, kind of going through his like insane pregame routine, like a foot away from him. It's a really good presentation. I do like also the panels that they have for halftime have been really good. I think that Haslam's like the breakout star of all of this stuff. He's been probably my favorite player, host to watch.
I'm biased as I wear my Clippers hat. I think he's Amazon though. Blake Griffin has done a great job. I mean, both of them actually, it kind of shows like it's kind of pushed ESPN, oddly enough. I know this is betting, but we'll get to the other stuff. But it's kind of oddly pushed ESPN to be taking, I think, a little bit more seriously. You know, they got rid of Stephen A. Smith. They're adding Malone. Like their new NBA countdown has kind of like a little bit more of a serious feel to it now, which you love because like competition breeds improvement. And you look at this and you say, oh, like Amazon and NBC have hit the ground running. Maybe we should actually try to do something here because we're just not the only show in town. And sure enough, it's been brilliant.
Yeah, ESPN's panelists are going to have to start wearing bomber jackets like all the guys on Amazon for both the NFL.
Or just break down basketball. That'll work, too.
That works, too. So what'd you see last night? The only thing that I really took away from last night, it was another big win for the Rockets. Now 10-3 on the season overall, 9-4 against the spread. I bring up that spread record because I think that if I were making a power rankings of teams that I trust the most with my money on the line, Houston might be number one because they do have kind of that tenacity defensively. And then, like, you're just not going to get an awful, awful offensive performance on a team with a team with Alperen Şengün and Kevin Durant.
Yeah, to put it another way, you know, their floor is pretty high, right? Like, there's just, even on any given night, if they're off, they're so good defensively that they're probably going to keep themselves in a ton of these games. And even last night, you know, after that third quarter, they get outscored 30-17. You're like, okay, here we go. Like the Cavaliers, specifically Donovan Mitchell, trying to drag his team back from the brink, and they just kind of clamp down near the midway point of the fourth quarter and keep them out of it. It's been really impressive to watch. And like you said, you just have this baseline from them in which you're always going to get. For me last night, I thought there was two. First off, you nailed this with Toronto. They continue to be just so consistent. Last night again, and I get it, it's the 76ers, but you know, you go out there, offensive rating at non-garbage time of 124.7. You kind of put this team a little bit in a kind of like a straitjacket. Philly really never got into that game, never looked comfortable offensively. And they've been, Toronto, very impressive to me almost every single night out. And even Tyrese Maxey, for him at least, a very muted 24 points and 9 assists on 8 of 14 shooting. Toronto's been really impressive. They're now 10-5. It looks like they're going to be very solid in terms of their standing inside of the top six potentially in the East. And the other is, I texted this to you guys right before we came on, you and Kelly Bidlin. How does Chicago keep doing this? I mean, at some point, you think they're going back home to take on Miami on, I think it's the 21st of tomorrow. you got to think that maybe that's a little bit of a letdown after an insane road trip in which they play double overtime against Utah. They lose a ridiculous winner against Denver. And then last night, Vucevic hits a game winner to give them the dub in Portland. This, to me, I mean, Chicago's been great. But of these teams that have been, I think, playing above their skis a bit, I guess, like Toronto, Chicago, some of the others, Chicago feels tenuous at best because they keep getting these really ridiculous clutch wins. I think that's the second game winner for Vucevic in 2 weeks, right? He had one against they had one 2 weeks ago at home. I can't remember who they were playing, but like this has been a wild run from Chicago.
Yeah, I think he also had a – if he didn't have a game winner, it was like a dagger against the Nuggets the other night too, right? Didn't he have three at the top of the key? Yeah. They've been great, and it's like – it's the type of thing where like I think there's a lot of Chicago fans that are, you know, upset about the direction of the franchise and all that, but like it's kind of fun to see them just – exceed expectations every year. I think the Billy Donovan's one of the best coaches in the league. And at least the difference with this team is that there are young guys contributing to it. And it's like, maybe you won't pick at the top of the draft every year, but there's something to be said about creating a positive environment and being able to develop guys in a winning system. And I do think that they are a team that it just seems like 40 plus wins every single year, no matter what the win total is, bet the over as long as Donovan's there.
By the way, it was the Philly game. They won that 113-111, and Josh Giddey drove under the basket and they kicked it out to Vuce for like a corner three.
Oh, the corner three,
That he hit there. That was also a game winner. So, and that, you know, that preceded a 5-game losing streak. So this team is mortal. But the fact that this road trip has gone the way it has after losing those two games to start, but I mean, these have been nuts. These totals have been flying over for this team as well because they're playing offense at such a high level, but their defense stinks. Like, they've been a ton of fun to watch, and you do have to wonder, you know, old school handicappers like the hey, long, tough road trip, and this isn't particularly long, but coming back home. Now, the logic is for the old school guys, you know, you got to take care of your wife. There's distractions. You got to pay the bills because they can't do anything without you. But you do think that maybe after a tough, long road trip coming back home, there is a small letdown against the Heat team that does have some upside. They're good on offense. And, of course, they got Bam Adebayo back. And one would assume he'd be available on Friday.
Yeah, so the old school handicap is that you get home, you have to take care of your family. Whereas new school is you get home and you have your own setup for Call of Duty or something.
Yeah, right. Either way, though, it's just you have to denigrate somebody one way or the other. Either these new kids or just the wives of these broads.
And then what you said about the Raptors too, it's just like the offense has been shocking to me because I think that I thought that this team would be top 10 defensively and borderline top 15 on offense, and it's been kind of the other way around so far. But I do think the defense is going to pick up. So if the offense kind of stays there, maybe this is a team that flirts with contention in the Eastern Conference. I'm starting to get a little bit excited about my Darko Rajakovic Coach of the Year ticket at 25-1. He's down to 10-1 in some spots.
Yep. Dude, I think I was listening to the Low the other day, called him an early season Coach of the Year candidate. So he's definitely on the radar. I don't know if Low has a vote. I know he's like a somewhat shunned member of the media. He didn't have one last year, but I also know it's cyclical. Like, I don't think everybody, like some people have the same votes all the time, but others get votes every single year, every other year. So he might be part of it.
Yeah. All right, well, let's start off with tonight's games. We're starting with your Clippers at the Magic. Magic laying 5.5, total 218.5. Clippers have covered in 3 straight games and have had 2 full days off coming into this one. Injury report somewhat loaded now that Derek Jones Jr. has joined Kawhi Leonard on the injury report. Will be out tonight. And no Paolo Banchero for the Magic. What do you make of this game?
Yeah, to your point, I mean, it seems like we're probably at the bottom of the barrel in terms of like a power rating. So maybe this is the time to keep buying on this team. You know, they close about 2.5-point favorites against Dallas on the road to start this road trip. They win and they cover by 5, by about 6 points or whatever it was. Obviously, stay inside of the number against Boston in a hard-fought game. And then, of course, against Philly, leading pretty much the whole way. And then Philly comes storming back and gets a win. They were a 4.5-point dog there. So the wins aren't coming, but they are somewhat competitive. And I'd lean a little bit toward potentially staying inside of this number as well. I don't have a play, but without Paolo Banchero out there, we know that this offense for Orlando can somewhat struggle. I mean, the other night, they get their win, Orlando does. They do it by, I think they shot like just under 30% from 3 or whatever it was the last time we saw him out there on the floor. So I think that this is probably a spot where you can come in here, have Harden work his magic as usual, and be able to stay inside of this number against an Orlando team that's had some fits and starts but has played better in winning 4 out of 5. And by the way, the game I'm thinking of is the Warriors game the other night where they won 121-113. So I have some faith that the Clippers are better than what they've shown, and I think that Harden's been great and they can stay inside of this number, but they've just been so bad. And without Derek Jones Jr., like you mentioned, the depth is extremely tested. And here's the other thing too, Zach, as you well know, I mean, Chris Paul's like out of the rotation. He's not playing well. Like, there's just not much depth. They're asking Kobe Sanders to come in, and granted, he's a young guy, so it's kind of like a positive sign, but that's a team that is definitely vibes wise and everything else, not one I think you want to sit back and sweat on a night to night basis, even though they've been playing better.
Yeah, I'd lean with them covering. I don't have anything in terms of sides or totals. I also lean under in this game. It's 219.
Same.
Clippers 29th in pace, Magic 22nd. I think while LA has been, you know, disappointing defensively, still a team that I think is defensive minded. And I'm guessing that they spent part of the last 2 days trying to figure out what the defense is going to look like without Derrick Jones Jr. But I actually do have a play in this game. It's a weird one. I'm going Nick Batum over 4.5 points at minus 129.
Sure.
He has had 6+ points in 4 straight and 5 of the last 6. He's played 20 plus minutes in the last 6 games. I'm guessing there's going to be 25 plus minutes for him a night with no Derrick Jones Jr. And it's not the best matchup in the world, but what am I asking for? 3 and a transition bucket, like 5 points seems very reasonable. And it's a Magic team that has been a little bit leaker defensively than what we've seen in the past. So I think there are going to be opportunities for him.
Yeah, and I think to the point of the total, like I always like to say this every once in a while, which is if it goes over, because I lean under as well, I feel like it goes over by a pretty wide margin. The Clippers are just very clearly a jump shooting team. They're 26th in rim frequency, but they're 8th in frequency of three-point attempts. If they just get hot with the amount of three-point attempts they take, then you have a pretty good shot of getting this over just because of like the high side of variance of taking so many threes. In Orlando, at times, while they don't take a lot of threes, they will acquiesce and shoot some as well. So I do think that if it goes over, it probably goes over by a wide margin. But to your point about pace, Clippers don't run. They jog. And they're just going to take a bunch of jump shots. And if those don't fall in a road environment, then you could get a pretty ugly game.
Yeah, I'm with you there. All right, let's go to Kings Grizzlies. 8 p.m. Eastern tip. It is the Grizzlies laying 2.5 points. Totals 234.5. Probably a game I would have skipped if I were doing this myself. I've been skipping pretty much only, you know, games with spreads of like 15 to 20, just because I have nothing to add there. I'm not a guy that, you know, lays 20 points on a nightly basis. But
hey, the Wiz covered yesterday. I should have texted you guys. I was like, anybody else tempted by the Wiz? And then I didn't even do anything with it. And then sure enough, for our audience, we have a Harvard Handicappers group chat. And as Kelly has pointed out, we will send in a play, and if nobody responds, that is the consensus of, I didn't really have anything, or I don't really like it, and nobody responded to my Wizards comment, and then sure enough, they cover, and that, of course, dispelled any confidence I had, so I did not play it.
Yeah, and then the other big dog, the Kings, covered as well, so maybe I should be looking at those spreads. But yeah, this game, we have another loaded injury report for Memphis. It's disgusting right now. Ja Morant's out. Joining Ty Jerome, Scottie Pippen Jr., Javon Small, and seemingly Jaren Jackson Jr. is doubtful with a right ankle sprain. It's a team that is now just wildly shorthanded, and they are getting the Kings on the second night of a back-to-back, but that is not enough for me to be looking to the Grizzlies side, even though I do think that I've seen some signs of life since Zach Edey returned. Like, I thought that the game against the Spurs was competitive, but I think that this team needs some of those guards back. They need 2 of those 3 guards back at some point.
Yeah, so I think you want to see, as you were talking about here, the injury report. But if you're relatively clean, if you're Sacramento, I would ask the question that was asked yesterday of Indiana between our group chat, which is, if not now, when for Sacramento? You know, they've lost, I think, 7 straight now at this point. But if they're going to be relatively healthy coming off of that back-to-back, given how thin Memphis is, you know, this seems, and it seems somewhat similar to the Pacers game too, in that the market is actually moving in Memphis direction. And generally you see that on the second legs of back-to-backs when a team is rested versus a team that's not, you'll see like that point bump once the line is hung. But I don't know, man, it seems ugly, but if I get a clean injury report for Sacramento, I feel like I'd rather be on Sacramento here than I would be on Memphis.
Yeah, I agree with you, especially if you're getting plus money odds and you have the Kings guys healthy. I think that would be the way to go. I'm not going to touch it. I'm hoping that we see Memphis turn some things around soon, but my over 39.5 is on life support right now.
Yeah, I would agree. And you don't have to bet them all.
Yeah, you know. All right, let's go to a game that I think that both of us will be interested in betting. I have a play in this game. 76ers at Bucks, 8 p.m. Eastern tip. 76ers -2.5 is the spread. Totals 224.5. Giannis is out for the Bucks.
Yep.
PG likely back in for the 76ers, and Joel Embiid questionable, which feels kind of like a probable to me. And Kelly Oubre Jr. out for Philadelphia tonight.
Yeah, and situationally for Philly tonight, I think not the best. I think, is this their 3rd and 4 tonight? Yeah, say 3rd and 4 and second leg of a back-to-back. So situationally, you don't really love it for Philadelphia. But to your point, 2 of the guys that are going to be in here have been missing time. So it's not like they're going to be taxed or fatigued in any way, shape, or form. And I kind of trust, I mean, unless I missed anything last night, I kind of trust that Tyrese Maxey's going to play in these situations. He's been pretty durable. He's obviously in pretty good shape. I don't think you're in a situation with a young guy like that that you're going to sit him. So I would think that I would be Philly here, just given where the injury report's at, where Milwaukee is at without Giannis. I mean, it's a small sample size so far, but the returns without Giannis on the floor are disgusting. And they could be one of the worst teams in basketball over this two-week stretch that he could potentially be out. I know that the market, again, is kind of shorting this given where Philly's at, but I wouldn't be surprised if this closes like 3.5-ish once we get like official news that everybody's up and ready to go in terms of the triumvirate of Embiid, George, and Maxey, which kind of sounds like a law firm, but not entirely.
Yeah, strong lean to the Sixers side for me. I think you nailed it. Like, Maxey's probably going to play. He's young. He's healthy. I think Edgecombe will play, even though he was dealing with like back spasms last week, and there were, yep, you know, some questionables there on the injury report. But I think the Philly gets most of those guys back tonight, and I do think Philly should win. But the play I do have in this game that I just mentioned is Ryan Rollins over 27.5 points and assists at -114. As bad as this might look for the Bucks, somebody's going to have to do something. Yeah. Without Giannis so far, it has been Rollins. He has played two games without Giannis this year. He had 32 points and 8 assists against the Warriors on October 30th, 25 points and 6 assists against the Hornets on November 12th. The Sixers are last in the league at defending PNR ball handlers this year. That's why I had Emmanuel Quickly to go over 15.5 points last night. And they are also pretty weak defending in transition, which is where Rollins can get them too. So, yeah, I think that Ryan freaking Rollins is a good play over 27.5 PA. And I do think that he puts up some pretty big numbers.
You know what? I might tell you on that too, because it's almost like diet Austin Reeves. Like when Luka got hurt, right? Where they were just like, dude, we got to do something here. Like, yep, let's just let you run almost every single thing and see if we can generate it at all. And to the point of how bad the Bucks are, because we should put some context behind it, without Giannis on the floor so far this season, they've been outscored by 12.8 points per 100 possessions, averaging 104.2 points per 100 possessions. That is good for the fifth percentile, which is not good, only better than 5% of the qualified lineups. And then 117 points per 100 possessions. Their most used lineup without Giannis has a -21 net rating. So this is just all bad for them. And as we discussed, this is why I like doing this with you. I will add Philly here today at -2. I wanted to get your thoughts on it as well. And I'm going to tell you on the Rollins thing. I like that a lot, actually.
Yeah, let's do it. I might end up on the Sixers. I'm just going to want to see that injury report first. I think that everyone's going to play.
What are you talking about? You don't want to play with the injury report? Let's go. Like, nothing has ever gone wrong when you just decide to play things before the injury report comes out.
One of the worst things that I've been doing since we started doing this podcast again is I've been guessing who's going to be playing the second legs of back-to-backs, and I have been awful at it. But I've gotten a few right the last few days. I had my biggest day of the year yesterday. That was nice, a nice little bounce back day. But yeah, hopefully we keep it rolling today.
It's funny, like doing the show now, Stormy is like, you know, you get these injury reports updates in the mornings and things like that. She's now experienced me just going, dah! Like just like in the middle of like the show, I don't know. She's like, what's wrong? I'm like, Zion Williamson's not playing. Like things like that, which is so ridiculous. But I like, you know, you miss the sweat. But then again, ask me in like February when like for the 20th time this year, a guy that was probable gets downgraded to doubtful and is not going to play.
Yeah, I wish I had a solution for the injury report nonsense, but there's got to be something that's better. Like there's got to be.
How about this? I wonder if you, because I've had this idea and you're really smart with this stuff. My idea was you have to do mandatory shoot around reports. So every single day you have to report whether or not a guy, and it can't be like binary, like participated or not. Like you have to do like, you know, like a practice reports, like limited DNP or whatever. You have to add like a third degree in there. So to give us an idea of whether or not that guy's going to play. Cause like, you know, the injury report for the NFL, generally if a guy's limited in practice, you know, he's going to play that week. So you can't just put did participate. You got to put like full participation or limited, whatever it is, and kind of understand if they did or did not, because I think that would kind of help a little bit. And you have to make it mandatory as well.
Yeah, that's a better idea than I had. I floated to my dad who listens to this podcast, Mitchell Cohen. Hello, Dad. I floated the idea of if you put someone on the injury report, they can't play. If they're on there at all, you know, questionable, whatever you want to list them as with an injury, if you put them on, they are not allowed to play. That penalizes them if they make the last minute decision and try to play with gamesmanship or something.
Yeah, I think that works. I mean, as I think about my own idea as well, I think it was Reeves against the Spurs 2 weeks ago. He actually participated in shoot around, but then ended up not playing. So it's not perfect, but I think you also just have to hold these team accountable to an extent.
Yeah.
You know, like the Bucks, as we're talking about here, I don't think there's a team that has a higher rate of probable players not playing in the game than the Milwaukee Bucks. Those are the types of things that you just can't keep doing. And you should probably also have a deadline. Like, enough of these game time decisions. You know, like, let me know, I don't know, an hour before the game, 30 minutes before. Like, you just have to have something that is a little bit more clear.
Yeah. All right. Before we move into the game of the night, the Hawks versus the Spurs, attention to any listeners who are new to VSiN. Signing up for our new free daily newsletter is a great way to catch up. Delivered straight to your inbox every morning, VSiN's newsletter offers picks, data, and strategies for the day's betting menu. Sign up for free now at vsin.com/newsletter and start receiving your free newsletter tomorrow morning. That's vsin.com/newsletter. Stay ahead of the game and bet smarter with VSiN. All right, just teased it. Hawks at Spurs. Spurs laying 1.5. Totals 232.5. This is a play that I believe both of us are on in some capacity. I wonder if Kelly Bidlin's on it as well for a friendship play. But I have the Hawks plus 1.5 against the Spurs tonight. I do think that the Hawks win the game outright. I just took the 1.5 because it wasn't that different of a price compared to the money line for me. But this is an Atlanta team that, you know, just had their 5-game winning streak snapped in Detroit. But it was a competitive game again, and we are now looking at a 6-3 sample size without Trae Young, where the net rating is plus 5.9. Spurs very shorthanded with no Wembanyama, no Castle, no Harper. I really like the matchup for Atlanta, being able to throw, you know, Alexander Walker and Daniels on Fox. And then I do think that the Hawks have, you know, trustworthy wing defenders for all the other spot-up shooters that the Spurs have. I don't think San Antonio is going to be able to create a lot of offense here.
Would agree with all points here. I did text Kelly Bidlin. He did respond. I said, are you on Atlanta? His response was itching. So it sounds like he's definitely in our realm. I agree with all points. I played Atlanta money line tonight, and everything that you've talked about here, some of the numbers for your audience too, if you go back to October 31st, so that's since Trae Young has been out, this Atlanta team, one of the best defensive teams in the league. You're talking about a top seven team. Like, they have been really, really good. Obviously, they've been winning these games as well. They've been supplementing their offense, oddly enough, which I thought was somewhat surprising. So I like this team, man. Like, you talk about their ability to switch, defend, play really well against a shorthanded Spurs team. Everything to me points to, at the very least, I had this flipped. I thought Atlanta would have been like a 1.5, 2-point favorite. Same. We're starting to kind of head in that direction as we're speaking right now, and it's not a big flip at all, so I wouldn't be surprised if we end up being right and they go off as the favorite tonight too, so that was part of my logic as well. But you hit, to me, the biggest nail, which is, man, they're so no Harper, no Castle, no Wemby. Like, this is a tough spot to be in, and I know they've played 2 games without Wembanyama. Congratulations. It was the Kings and the Grizzlies, if I remember correctly. This is a different beast, so I'm with you. Give me Atlanta here in this spot. I took a money line, as you just mentioned. I think they go off as the favorites, and obviously in a 1-point spread, I'm not going to go off as a genius if I say they're going to pull off the upset.
Yeah, and this Hawks team is like starting to be really interesting to me. I mentioned it, you know, the other day. Kind of the main talking point that everyone's talking about is whether or not they need Trae Young. I'm kind of interested in whether or not they need Porzingis, because I think that Onyeka Okongwu has been an absolute monster this year and has completely added a 3-ball to the point that it's not like, can this guy shoot? He's like taking 8 or 9 a game over the last couple of weeks, and he's knocking down 3 or 4 of them. Like, this is a team that I thought that Okongwu should have probably been starting to start the year. But now that, like, he's knocking down these threes, I wonder if you could maybe flip Porzingis for something that helps at the deadline a little bit more. But, yeah, it's a loaded rotation, and there's definitely moves to be made to help, and I just wonder what they are. Like, I do think that they're going to be better with Young if they can kind of figure it out, but I don't know if it's worth paying Young a max anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. In terms of the price tag, you're right. In terms of, with, like, is Young worth it? I do think he would fit really well here if they change the way they want to play a bit. I think it was Zach Lowe who made up the great point, like, you know, like, just cut down on the amount of pick and rolls that Trae Young's going to play. I still think they need, like, a creator, an initiator, just like Young in the backcourt. You know, you can only get so far with Nickeil Alexander-Walker running your offense. But if he buys in, which he seems to have, I think there were some of the stats out there, like, he's actually setting more screens at any point of his career than the last, like, 2 seasons. You know, Snyder's a good coach, and I think he kind of gets to these guys. So I think Trae Young would kind of buy in. I don't think he has a negative reputation, but I don't think he gets enough credit for kind of changing the way he wants to play a little bit for some of these different iterations of the team. And he seems just kind of more engaged when you watch some of these games, even though he hasn't been playing. So I think he actually fits pretty well. It's just that, will he be willing to take somewhat of a backseat in terms of being, like, the big gravitational force on offense and actually let others, like a promising Jalen Johnson among them, to really run some of the sets that they go up there with?
Yeah, and I think that like one of the things that's been really obvious to me with Young out is like Daniels is so bad offensively. I love to praise the way he plays defensively. Like that still was a great trade for them, but like he just doesn't really do anything on offense. It's like he's not taking spot up threes. He's not that good of a creator. Like I know that he's kind of billed as the jumbo playmaker, but he's really not comfortable with the basketball. So when Young's not out there, it's just like really ugly in a lot of different ways. And I think that they like they're maybe seeing that as well. That like if I'm seeing it, I'm sure they are as well.
Yeah. I'm dude, they're fun. They're great. They're finally exactly what we wanted them to be. How many years I think you've been on this train of, you know, betting them to win the division and asking them to do this, this, and that, and they're finally kind of showing exactly what they need to be.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, Johnson is so good. Like, hopefully he's got an all-star in him this year, maybe next year.
Most important.
All right. Let's move on to some futures. I wanted to open the floor to you. I know you've talked about this a lot on Pod to the Futures, available wherever you get your podcasts with Mitch Moss. Victor Wembanyama's injury, I think that opened up DPOY in a way that is almost unimaginable. Like last year, it was a little bit later in the year that we kind of got the news that Wemby was out, and there was kind of some players that had already made some cases for number two, which ended up being number one. Right now, I think it's a blank canvas in terms of what people are able to do. And I think that, you know, through whatever 20 games, wherever we are right now, I think it's been Isaiah Hartenstein. Sorry, 10 games. I don't even know what it is. But Isaiah Hartenstein, he's been number one in defensive win shares at Basketball Reference, averaging 2.1 stocks per game. I just haven't added it because, like, I think the Thunder guys are going to all take many votes from each other. Like, I know that Holmgren's the favorite in the market, but it's too hard for me to back any OKC player when there's three players right now in the top five in defensive win shares. And I think that once, you know, Dunks and Threes makes defensive EPM available for the actual season and not just the projections, it'll show something very similar because the Thunder are just insane on defense.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think there's, you know, there's quite a few people like Mitch brought this up on Pod of the Futures. And I think we're going to get this again where people are barking up the wrong tree with Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. I just don't think he's ever going to be viewed as their best defender. I don't really think he is either. You know, and that's not to say he's a bad defender. He's just kind of like their third guy, I think, in terms of what not only what he's asked to do because of his load on offense, but just in terms of pure overall talent. Like, I think that he is the third best defender on this team. And I'm with you in general that, yeah, like, if a novice voter, we'll call it, is just evaluating this defensive race surface level, they'll probably lean a little bit more toward Holmgren just because they view him as that in terms of reputation as opposed to giving Hartenstein the credit. But either way, your whole premise of the Thunder guys are going to cannibalize each other, I think is very true. So, and I also like what you said because I think this is the way this market is priced right now. It is a blank canvas. I don't think the market's right at all in the way that this thing's been priced. I don't think Chet Holmgren is plus 150 in terms of his probability to win it. I think if you dive into Evan Mobley's numbers, we talked about this on Pod of the Future, so no way he's the second shot. Yeah. I think the market just said, oh, this guy was like the default candidate last year. Let's put him up there. Victor Wembanyama at plus 450. I'm running with the premise that he's out, just like you, so he shouldn't be up there. Dyson Daniels, the only reason he got any consideration last year was because of the steals. He's not going to be up there again because he's not on pace to do it. So the whole point here being, this is a completely mispriced market, so you have to look around for some different stuff. The guys I landed on that I was kind of looking at, Rudy Gobert, 55-1. He's got the reputation. In the early going of the season, the differential with him on the floor versus off the floor is staggering for Minnesota. You know, whether that maintains itself, that's fine. But for anybody listening, when he's on the floor versus when he's off, there is about a 20-point difference per 100 possessions in terms of them giving up about 20 more points per 100 possessions without Gobert out there. I know he's bald. I know some might think he's washed, as you had pointed out, Zach. But
I think it's because I think it's the. I think it's the look. I think that I can't get over what he looks like right now. That's what I mean.
Yep. But I do think that there's going to be a lot of people that will gravitate toward giving this to Gobert. Mitch brought up to me on Pod to the Futures. He goes, "Well, don't you think that his reputation took a hit in the postseason?" And my thought was, no, I think just a lot of people who bet against him that year to win Defensive Player of the Year, in your minds, defense, like his reputation took a hit. Nobody has thought that in the circles that decide this award, I think, for Rudy Gobert. So that's one. I think two, I thought you brought up a great one. You can find him at 300-1. I was astonished when I dug under the hood to Jalen Suggs' numbers. Like the on-court.
That was Kelly, actually. That was Kelly.
Oh, was it Kelly?
Yeah.
Dude. That was incredible. When you really look underneath it and look at the differential for him as well, I mean, the Orlando Magic without him on the floor are an abhorrent defensive team statistically. Now, I think they're going to be better eventually, but still, he is clearly in the early going of this season the driver behind how good they have been defensively. He doesn't have the steal numbers. He does have the reputation. I don't know if it would be enough for a guard to win it, But I do think that he is up there for that. And the other, which it wasn't a great day for them yesterday, would Donovan Klingon be live to do this? The differential with him on the court, off the court is there. He's averaging 9 rebounds. The steals and blocks, like you pointed out, the stocks are actually up there as well for Klingon. And he's a front court guy, which I think a lot of these voters really gravitate towards.
Yeah, I think that I always look to centers first. Suggs always is going to have a good case to me. The Thompson twins are both like very deserving candidates if you want to go a wing. So I think that maybe a little playing both Thompsons might be a good idea. But it's wide open. We're going to learn a lot over the next couple of weeks. So that's a market that we'll be looking at here on Hardwood Handicappers. And I'm sure that JVT will be doing the same on Money Moves and Pod to the Futures. And then I just want to throw this one future out there for you. I had a few more listed, but we're running up against it with time. Lakers to win the Pacific Division is somehow still -150. I feel like I'm missing something here because they're 2 games up on Phoenix, 3 games up on Golden State. I think the Clippers are going to turn it around. That was actually one of the next things I was going to ask you about, is the Clippers are -150 to make the playoffs. I still think that there's a shot they do. But the Clippers and Kings, as far as the division goes, they're out of it. So I don't know who's catching Los Angeles. I'm very high on Phoenix. I also wanted to talk about that because they're +275 to make the playoffs right now, and they're top 10 in both offensive and defensive rating. But, man, I think -150 is a great price for the Lakers. I think even if you were to lose Luka and LeBron, LeBron at some point, as long as one of them's out there with Reeves, like, you're in pretty good shape.
I'm surprised to hear that considering didn't you like the Warriors coming into the season?
I did, but it's been as bad as it could have been in terms of guys in and out of the lineup with injuries and just age keeping them out on back-to-backs. Like, I don't think that they're going to be a borderline 50-win team. There at least seems to be a path to that for the Lakers.
I think the price is a little high for me personally. I actually still kind of believe in Golden State. One of the things that kind of troubles me, you know, before the blowout of Utah, the Lakers were 10-4 with like a +1.2 point differential. So, that clearly showed that you're kind of dancing on the razor's edge, winning these tight games, these one-score games. How often can you continue to do that if you're Los Angeles? I know LeBron coming back kind of helps you in that regard. And by the way, positive sign that LeBron in 30 minutes only took 7 shots. I think he's kind of willing to maybe be a secondary piece for this Lakers team. But I still think that in 17 games in, I think there's a higher ceiling for Golden State in that at -150, would you still at some point be able to get a better price on Los Angeles should the Warriors kind of push them? And they would still maybe win the division, but you're not sweating out -150 and you could get something better as the season goes along.
Yeah, and you just said it about LeBron. I talked about it 2 days ago. Like, the best case scenario for both him and the Lakers is that he just kind of turns into a scoring four that, you know, picks his spots as a roller, a cutter, and a scorer. But I just think that him running less of the offense is best for all parties. It'll prolong his career and it'll make them better because they do need to put the ball in Reeves and Luka's hands just pretty much the entire game. Like, those guys deserve to have it. And I think that's the best version of the Lakers. I think LeBron should be the third option in terms of running actual offense.
Yep, I would agree. Real quick, the Warriors schedule coming up. Home versus Portland, Utah, Houston's going to be tough. New Orleans, OKC is going to be tough. But that's a 5-game homestand that they have against some lesser teams in the Western Conference. Maybe rip off some wins before you go on a trip that includes, you know, Chicago, Philly. Like, that's a winnable stretch of games before a baseball set against your Suns in mid-December.
Yep. Ooh, that's a nice little baseball set. Maybe I'll head to one of those. All right, before we head into our best bets and recap what we have, time to put your hoops IQ to the test with Better Picks. Open the Better app, pick more or less on your favorite players' points, rebounds, and assists, then watch the sweat in real time. Use code VSINPOD for $10 free, no deposit required. Plus, Better's got insane multipliers, up to 1,000x on just 2 picks. Download Better, BETR, and get in the game with promo code VSINPOD, VSINPOD. All right, let's recap some best bets. I have tonight Nick Batum over 4.5 points, -129. Ryan Rollins over 27.5 points and assists, -114. And then Hawks +1.5, -115 against the Spurs. JVT, what do you have?
I'm going to add that Rollins play. I'm going to go with Philly -2, trying to get ahead of the market. Famous last words. I'll add these. Added in the course. I know our wonderful producer asked me before, and I only gave him one, but we've added this over the course of the show here. And then Hawks money line -102. So those will be the 3 for me today.
Awesome. All right.
Don't get mad at me, Michael. I apologize.
Before we head out, I just wanted to, is there anything there with calling Rudy Gobert the French hammer because he looks like Marcin Gobertot?
Ooh, that's a good one. Yeah, I think so. I like it. The bald looks bald and beard looks really good. It's a good
bald combo. And beard is good. If you're gonna be bald, you gotta have a beard and you gotta be in good shape. That's what I've. That's what my friends and I have decided.
Yeah, or just a really burly dude too. Like that, you can't be. You can't be a fat guy with like that soft. You got to be like burly. It looks like you could bench like 1,000 pounds.
Or like Brian Daboll's got it pretty easy. He did pretty well with it.
Yeah, but he got fired.
He did, but not because he was bald.
Maybe.
Yeah, maybe. All right, well, this has been a good episode of Hardwood Handicappers. I always love having JVT on. We will have him on, not next Thursday because it is Thanksgiving. There are no games, but the following Thursday, we will have JVT back on. We will hit some futures. We will hit that night's games, and hopefully we get some winners tonight. Make sure you join us again for the Friday episode of Hardwood Handicappers.